quick. Run for your life. It's the Loot Mechanics Podcast. Beerless and Skolmas have returned from beyond space and time to wreak havoc upon all they survey while chatting sarcastically about video and tabletop gaming. With snark and poorly thought out hot takes, they may bring even the strongest man to their knees, shattering even the most stalwart sanity. Run while you still can.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back. I'm Skolmas.
And I'm Beerless.
So, what's been going on with you this week, sir?
Not a whole lot. Been working a lot.
Well, it is that time of year, right?
It's getting
colder, and you kind of work in heating and air conditioning, so.
Yes, get very busy.
Yeah. My work, we're expecting to be busy right now, but the expected strike was averted, so everything's fine all of a sudden, which is kind of weird. People are getting time off again and all that. Kind of cool. I mean, I didn't need any time off. I'm fine, but I like working the holidays personally, but I know a lot of people were very stressed, and now we're hiring all these people and pretty much going to run out of hours sometime early next year. But not my problem. I got a full-time job. Anyway, so gaming-wise, anything special going on?
I don't know if I mentioned last time that me, my wife, and son are all running Guild Wars 2 together, having a lot of fun doing that.
Nice. You had not mentioned that. That's cool. Yep. Your son's getting into it now.
Sort of. He'd still rather play Minecraft.
Ah, that's fine. MMOs aren't for everybody. Speaking of MMOs, I have uninstalled all MMOs from my gaming laptop.
Yay?
I mean, the only one resembling an MMO is No Man's Sky. I still have that on my machine. But I'm just not playing them, man. So I was like,
no, you do what works for you.
Why waste the space? I can reinstall them if I feel like it later. But right now, just don't see a need, you know? Anyway, this is our last topical show of 2021. So
our shows are topical?
Well, shows where we discuss something that's recent news, let's say. We okay. do those a couple times a month, usually. Well, this is the last one before we move into the whole holiday and end of year stuff, you know?
The main topic.
So, Obelis.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of a little tabletop role-playing game called Cortex Prime?
I'm pretty sure we've mentioned it before.
Yeah, I mean, it's not something I own. I've heard of it. I've heard decent things about the game. It's apparently a setting agnostic, well, what most people would think of as a universal or multi-genre game. Basically a framework upon which you can build and play anything. Kind of like a GURPS. Mm-hmm. If I had to guess, or Fate, or other good examples, Savage Worlds. Well, apparently, Cortex Prime is owned by Fandom. Now, Fandom is, they started out as a website, basically a wiki site, talking about various, well, fandoms and fan-related things.
Right.
Well, they've grown into a pretty big company. They own a lot of stuff. They've got a pretty big spot on YouTube. You've seen the Honest Trailers stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, that's Fandom. They own that. stuff like that. Well, they also own Cortex Prime. Well, they did something with their licensing recently, which is interesting. A lot of companies have been making, changing their licenses in ways to be more favorable for hacks and mods out of the community.
Right. Didn't Merc Borg do something like that?
Merc Borg did a
Merc Borg.
Yeah, they did something that was very, very generous. You can make or sell anything you want based on Merc Borg. All you have to do is put in your thing that it's compatible with Merc Borg, that has to be prominently displayed, and you put in a statement saying that this is unofficial content. They have a specific setting, you know, specific text you need to put in your book.
Right.
And it's pretty clear cut. You put that on the front page, you know, where you're detailing, okay, this, you know, who wrote it and all that stuff.
That way you're not, you know, profiting off of all their hard marketing.
More to the point, you're not trying to imply that this is an official product. This is definitely an unofficial product. You have to make that very clear in all of your licensing, all your marketing. If you put it up on Kickstarter, like the most recent Cyborg, or although I think Cyborg is semi-official, but I'm not sure. But for sure, Vast Grim, which is a science fiction game based on Merc Borg, which, yes, I just bought. I've got the PDF, and I'm waiting for the print to come out when it finally prints, probably next year. But it looks awesome. It's definitely unofficial, but they can make it, they can sell it, whatever. You just have to fit in with that licensing. It's very community-friendly, let's say. Well, then you've got ones like Fandom did for Cortex Prime, which is not. They've got a license for use of, they've got a free license for the community and a commercial license, which is great, which is very similar to Merc Borg's. You can make stuff and post it up to them, and they'll eventually, although they're not taking submissions right now, I don't think, but they'll put them up on their website so people can download them for free all day long. And that's great. You can share your stuff all you want.
Mm-hmm.
Or like we said, you can sell it. As long as you follow these specific rules, no big deal. Well, Dicebreaker.com had a really good article recently about this, about why this recent change to Cortex Prime's license kind of caused a bit of a backlash among players and role-playing designers.
Well, that's putting it mildly, but yeah.
Yeah, well, they kind of pulled what Bethesda tried to pull with mods for Fallout and Skyrim several years ago. Basically, they put in this license that if you put out something for free, give away for free to the community, that's great. They totally are for it. You want to do something for commercial use? Cool. Follow these rules? Boom. Great. One problem. Everything that's released, they call them all mods, right? They're all Cortex Prime mods. Every mod, quote, all trademarks and copyrights in and to the Cortex system and game mechanics, systems, mods, and other rules created, whether by Fandom or you, that become a part of the Cortex system. Any new Cortex Prime mechanics, mods, or other rules you create or alter become available for other members of the Cortex community to use under the license linked above. All right. That seems fine on its face. But what it also says is that fandom can use their license to claim ownership of anything created using the Cortex Prime system.
And that's the gotcha.
Yeah. Basically, hey, you want to make this? Awesome. We know this is a popular system. People want to hack for it. Great. And we'll just take that copyright. And if we like that, we'll just go ahead and install that into our game and use it. And you have no recourse. So if you released something, you released a mod, you created a setting, let's say, for Cortex Prime, and you want to give it away for free, and fandom likes what you made, they can basically yoink it and put it out as they want. They'd have the rights because you signed them off by making a mod and releasing it. Or if you did something commercially and they like part of it, yoink, they take it. Now, a lot of people are going to go, oh, I'm flattered that part of my creation is now an official product. They didn't say they'd give you credit.
Well, I'm glad that's coming to light, because a lot of people could be cranking out some really good, you know, really good stuff for them. And it's best that they know, so they don't do it.
Yeah, it was similar rules which caused people, the modding community that Bethesda had, to basically revolt and walk away and yank all their mods for Fallout 4, for a lot of mods that were done for Skyrim and such. They just said, nope, we're not going to do it. We're not going to let you do that. Here's the thing, though. It also includes a section that explicitly denies the use of the license to create content the public would deem, quote, offensive or inappropriate for minors, unquote.
In other words, that's another way to keep the LGBTQ community in line.
Oh, no, that's not what they said. But historically, that is indeed the case. As Dicebreaker very clearly states, that is basically, that is a dog whistle, code words for, yeah, no, we don't want any of that in our system. Even if it's free, even if it's unofficial, we reserve the right to go, nope, smack down.
Well, I'm sure we don't have to, warn the community, because they're usually a lot more on top of things like this than we are. But in case you're not, stay away from Cortex Prime and all of their products. And they're showing their colors.
It's the thing with games like, well, I don't know the license for Savage Worlds, so I won't include that, even though I hear it is infinitely hackable and people love the hell out of that system. I don't own it, and I don't know the licensing situation on it, so I'm not going to comment on it. But Fate and Merkborg both are very community-friendly for licensing. You can do basically whatever you want within certain limitations, obviously, but they're not draconian at all. Especially Merkborg, which is ridiculously awesome, and people were baking stuff like crazy for it. Now, maybe people don't like that system. Sure. But here's the thing. Cortex Prime is, okay, sure, it's the newest version of a game system that goes back years, decades. Apparently, the Serenity, Battlestar Galactica, and Supernatural RPGs were all used the old system that became Cortex Prime. Okay, whatever. Don't care. Honestly, I don't own any of those games. I don't. They mean nothing to me. And this is basically the dumbest thing I could think of. But coming from fandom, it really doesn't surprise me because they are very corporate and they're all about how can we monetize? Mm-hmm. How can we, they're not looking to make the, use their platform to encourage people to make stuff that's compatible with their product, which then supports that product, which is how Merc Borg has continued to grow since its launch. It was a small doom metal role-playing game. It got good reviews, but if it didn't have the licensing it does, it wouldn't have had nearly the support it has. And now it has grown into this, you know, multiple. Every few months, there's another Kickstarter, another new game. And almost, I'd say every month, every few weeks, there's another supplement or adventure or release of monsters or new classes or whatnot for the system. Just people going out there. And these are all commercial. That's not even including the stuff being put out for free, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's turned Merc Borg into a relatively big player out of nowhere because it's so inclusive. They're not looking to make money off of it. They're making all the money they need off the products they have. And they're able to monetize free stuff because one of the things they do is they say, hey, if you want, give us, you want to post up your free stuff and have it posted on the website for free? Cool. And hey, just so you know, we're not going to pay you anything, but if we really like what you're doing, we'll go ahead and put it in one of our Merc Borg cult collections, which they release about once a year, and they'll sell that book. And you'll have your name, you'll be listed in this book. You're going to get credit for your stuff. People are downloading it for free off the website. They'll be able to sell it with some new content in there as well. So It's not like they're making money only on this stuff because they're giving it away for free. But this is a way for Joe Blow developer, who's, you know, just getting started out to go, hey, yeah, I've got content in this book. See, this is something I did. It's up on this website. People like this stuff. So hire me or check out this new stuff I made and I'm putting them on Kickstarter because, hey, I've been published. People might say, oh, that sounds a lot like getting paid in exposure. In a way, but they're also not taking advantage of you either. You know, right from the start, hey, if you're submitting it to be given away for free, if we really like it, we may end up putting it in one of these collections. You will not be paid for this. Mm-hmm. You will get your name in it. You're going to get credit, but you're not going to get paid. So it's fair. Everybody knows from the start, and they're not going to go, hey, we know you put this up for free, but we're going to go ahead and just take this. It's ours now. We own this. They always are very, this was made by this person. Check this person out. This guy's awesome. So, and I'm not trying to, you know, scream the whole, oh, Merc Borg is awesome. Merc Borg is awesome. Although they are. But this is just such a glaring disconnect. With that sort of license that's out there in the world, how does a company like Fandom think they can get away with this shit?
Because they've done it before, or someone else has done it before and gotten away with it, so they think they can too.
I don't know.
When you have to, you know, also take into consideration there are a lot of idiots in the world.
Yes. And a lot of people might really love that system and think, I can't possibly develop my idea for any other system. It'll only work here. And I'm here to tell you, you are wrong. Because as long as the Fate system exists, there is no idea out there that is can only work in one system. It can always be adapted to work with Fate. Always. That is the most hackable system I have ever seen in my life. It's a little too dense for me. I much prefer something a little lighter, but then again, Fate can, yeah, they've got Fate Accelerated, which is their light rules version of Fate, you know? So, anyway, I guess I'm not going to be buying Cortex Prime is what I'm saying.
Probably not. I know I won't be.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they're not going to miss my money, but since they now have a bunch of people saying, screw you, we're going to go play Savage Worlds or whatever else. Instead, I'm pretty sure this is not the reaction they wanted.
Well, and they may go, hey, we've screwed up. We've changed our policies, you know, and they correct this. And sure, go for it. But as long as they're going to claim your what you made for themselves without giving you any kind of credit, nope. Screw them.
Now, they may be leaning that way now. The Dicebreaker article does mention towards the end that perhaps fandom is cementing their legal protections to look more favorable to established IPs. There's a Masters of the Universe RPG. There's a Tales of Zadia, the Dragon Prince RPG, things like that. That maybe they're looking to get in on that gravy train.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Doucette, the community manager who's being quoted talking about all this, said, quote, a reasonable part of Cortex Prime is the ability for us to create tailored tabletop games for shows, movies, video games, and more that feel like a natural extension of the source material. Anything we release, from a simple social media post to a non-commercial license, must be done with those relationships in mind, just as they're done with the Cortex community in mind, unquote. Which, that's a lot of corporate speak. That doesn't really say anything.
Uh-huh.
Although, they do note that, this is Dicebreaker again, notes, the design team will almost certainly release an updated license agreement in the future, though Doucette said internal processes make that work slow. There's been no word on how fandom might legally enforce these agreements. So maybe they'll change their mind, or maybe they won't, and they're not sure how they'll enforce them in the first place. But I'm just going to say the full threat of it says, yeah, no, I'm no thank you. Nope.
What I read from it was, fuck these guys, I'm out.
Yeah, and a lot of other developers and whatnot, and players, and, you know, gamers, said the same thing. Your system ain't good enough. You're no Dungeons and Dragons here, guys. You're no Wizards of the Coast who can walk out and say, hey, you want to make stuff for us? You do it through DM's Guild. And yeah, you can make a little money off of it, and we'll make a little money off of it, and everybody's happy.
Yep.
But they still own, they're like, yeah, we own this system, and we're, you know, they've got some pretty tight controls over it. And they can go, yeah, that's not appropriate or whatever, and yoink. But,
well, I mean, they kind of have to, because they don't want somebody coming up with, you know, a Nazi-based game with their name on it.
Exactly. You know, that would just be bad for the brand.
And right.
I understand it. Fandom needs to protect their brand. Great. Cool. There's protecting the brand, and then there's
taking
this.
Possession of somebody else's creativity.
Right. Now, if it had only been, hey, we reserve the right to say, nope, yoink, excuse me, this ain't going to work. This is inappropriate or whatever. And as long as it's not something that's, they're bringing it down because they don't like your politics. They don't, you know, they don't like your, that it involves, has themes of LGBTQ or whatever in it. They're bringing it down because it's, they can, you know, they don't like the racial overtones or whatever, anything like that. As long as they're not discriminating against marginalized people, I don't have a problem with it. Protect the brand. Mm-hmm. Do what you got to do. That's your corporate job to do that. But that's different than going, yeah, we're just going to take this now. And you have no recourse because, well, you chose to develop your product using our system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm saying nobody should develop any third-party content for Cortex Prime.
Nope.
Period.
Not until they pull their head out and start being a little more cooperative with the fan base.
You helpful. Know what? Honestly, I wouldn't even go then, because look at it this way. If a company has already said, hey, they're going to do this, and then they back it off, history shows us more often than not, they come back around and try to sneak it back in at a later date.
Oh, yeah. You know, once they show their true colors, don't trust them ever again.
Exactly.
Other bullshit.
Hey, Bielis, you know what time it is?
No.
It's, well, time for the best and worst of 2021.
Guess.
It's like, yay.
I guess.
Oh, come on. I keep telling myself people like this segment, and that's why we keep doing it every year.
Yes, I know, but this year has been a really shitty year for good, bad TTRPGs.
Yeah, we'll get to that. Normally, I will say, normally we do a full show. Now, first the best of the year and then the worst of the year. This time we're kind of condensing it because, like you said, there's some problems with choices. But we did have good choices for the best games of the year. So would you like to go over your choice for best tabletop game of the year?
Well, there were a few that I saw that, you know, had come out this year that, you know, they looked really interesting. But, you know, once you go into, you know, what they're about, they're kind of like, meh. Just nothing really jumped out except for one, and that's the One Ring RPG. It's the second edition, and I'm kind of excited about it. I think it's going to be an awesome game.
Yep.
It's Lord of the Rings. I mean, how do you screw that up?
Well,
considering what, 10 years ago they put out the first edition of it, and it's been a juggernaut since then, and now they're doing the second edition.
For a brief time, the license went away, and it was being done as Adventures in Middle-earth under 5th edition rules.
Mm-hmm.
I have those. And you asked, how can you screw that up? Well, there's a reason why the license is now back with Free League, and they're putting out the One Ring again. I'm not saying that Adventures in Middle-earth was bad. It's not. It's just not Lord of the Rings. It's D&D.
And part of the problem is it seemed more like kind of a cash grab. You know, jump on a popular IP system and just crank this out and sell it to as many people as you can and then move on.
Yeah.
And it worked because you bought a copy.
Yeah, actually, I've got several of the books for it, mostly because my sweetie went and got them for me for Christmas last year. It was part of my presents.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy about that. I haven't been able to play them, but you have to use, you have to have the D&D core books just to play it. It's not a, like a lot of third-party books that have the basic rules already in them.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have your player's handbook and Dungeon Master's Guide and all that to run it. So I'm definitely on board with the One Ring and want to get myself a copy for sure. I just need to pay off the credit card first.
I was just reading the intro to it, and it had the Tolkien-esque feel mm-hmm. to it. You know, the way it was worded, the way the little narrative was going. You know, it was, can't remember who was talking, but they were writing a letter to Balin, and they were talking about how, you know, they kind of miss the adventures they were on. You know, it's the toque in them, but then they get back to, you know, their garden and all the cool things they have in the Shire, and their Baggins comes back, and it was just, you know, it was a good read. And it was, there was a whole bunch of, you know, younger halflings, or not halflings,
Hobbits,
right, who would be more than willing to go on that adventure that, you know, he's trained them on, and so has Gandalf, and so that's how they introduce your character.
So kind of a fourth age, because the third age ended with return of the king. So they would be set in the fourth age then.
I think it said it was set in the third age, but
yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Anyway, sounds spiffy. And you know, when it comes right down to it, the One Ring was one of the games I considered for my choice for best tabletop mm-hmm. game. There was actually a lot of them that I considered, like Thirsty Sword Lesbians or the Fallout RPG. But there's one game I got in my hands that basically the reason I chose it because I have it, I've seen it, I know it's awesome. So that gave it its one little step up over those others. And that's Dune, Adventures in the Imperium. I know some people balk at the price. It's a little pricey. It's $60 just for the basics, you know, game. Hell, I paid almost $100 for it. But I paid $30 basically for express shipping, and I got it sent to me from Britain in 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
I had it before many distributors in the United States did. But hey, Modiphius, pretty freaking awesome. And if you're willing to pay, they will get you your game, right? So, mm-hmm. Yeah, they delivered on their pre-orders for sure. After I'd had some problems with Amazon trying to get that game, Modiphius just basically went, oh, yeah, we can take care of you. It'll be a little expensive, but cool. It's worth every damn penny. There are some games I regret getting, having spent money on. Electric Bastion Land, I'm looking at you. But Dune, that is a game I could see not just running as a one-shot, but running as an extended campaign. It is easily in my top five role-playing games of the last decade. Easily. It puts games of similar price, like Cyberpunk Red, to shame. I like Cyberpunk Red. There's nothing wrong with it. It's basically Cyberpunk 2020 with some cleaned up rules and more content added in. Is it worth $60? Sure. But if it's worth $60, then for the same $60, Dune is looks way better. It is just that good. I'm super impressed with it. And while I like the idea of what the One Ring, I don't have it. Fallout role-playing game, I'd like to have it, don't have it. So can't really say. I have Thirsty Sword Lesbians. I know it's good. Dune's better. So it was an easy choice on that one for me. Of all the choices we're doing, that was the one thing that when we came to ask, you know, when I had to go, what are the best games and the worst games? It's like, best tabletop game, Dune. Moving on. Had it, and that was just, that's the one thing I didn't change my, I changed my choices on. So, do you have a choice for best video game, sir?
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of games that came out that I was really excited for. And, you know, the one I'm, you know, I mean, Baldur's Gate 3 looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to jump on another early access. And Final Fantasy, the remake, looks exciting, but I played that game an awful lot when it first came out.
Right.
And, of course, you know, there's Pathfinder, Wrath of the Righteous. Another one. If you played the first one, you're probably extremely excited for the second one. Because I know I am.
Okay.
But I don't have any of those. The one I do have is Solasta, Crown of the Magister. And that is a really good game. It is scary good. It's awesome. Based off D&D 5th edition rules, so some people will find that as, you know, a bad thing, but it works. And it's not, I don't know, I've played some CRPGs that the first few missions are just stupid easy. I mean, you just breeze straight through them.
Kill 10 rats?
Well, it's not exactly that. It's the mobs you're fighting against are just not that difficult.
Okay.
Early in this game, the creatures you're running across, they will tear you up. And, I mean, you have to really be, you know, you have to think about what you're doing, or people start dropping like flies. So, it's not one of those, you know, step in, stomp all over things, go up a couple levels, and then things start to get harder. Now, this one starts off hard right from the start. And then once you get the hang of it, then it starts to get easier because you're getting the idea, you know, the tactics down.
Hmm. That's cool.
And the nice thing is,
right?
Yeah, and they keep adding classes to it. I think they added Druid not too long ago. So
very nice.
Yeah, I started all over again because I wanted a sorcerer in my group. And so it was worth completely starting over just for that.
Nice. Now, there was one game I wanted to choose for my best video game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't feel like I can because technically it came out in 2020, but that was only on the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
It came out officially for PlayStation and Xbox in August of 2021. And that would be Hades.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't choose it because it did technically first come out in 2020. I tried to avoid games that were either remakes or HD upgrades or, you know, something like, or just came out on the platform of your choice this right. year. I was looking for new games. And unfortunately, not a lot of that. This year was full of HD freaking remakes of games. and remasters and collections.
Oh, you mean like Diablo 2?
Yes, like Diablo 2, which I'll admit was something I considered, but it's Blizzard, and fuck Blizzard, no, it don't go on the list. Also, it has problems.
Oh, yeah.
But there was one game that came out early in 2021 for the Switch. I do not have it, but I've seen gameplay. I've heard really good things. It has great Metacritic scores, critical darling, and it's a JRPG. I love Japanese role-playing games. Old school, retro style, Final Fantasy, Ultima, Dragon Quest, all those types of games. Love that stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is that in a modern game. Bravely Default 2. I think it got overlooked by a lot of the reviewers choosing their best of lists this year because it came out in, I think, February. But it is a solid, awesome little game. And from what I understand, it delivers in every single way. And it is on my list, by the way, of one of the things I want for Christmas this year. I'm kind of hoping I get that game in my stocking or something. Because, you know, that'd be awesome. It would give me something to play other than Animal Crossing and the few other physical games I have. Please, God, don't make me start Pokemon again. Pokemon Sword. Mm-hmm. I'm so over that. Anyhow, would you like to talk about your choice for one of the worst games of the year, like tabletop or video game, whichever you want to talk about first?
Well, since we did tabletop first, I'll do video game. And the worst video game of 2020 or 2021 would be Battlefield 2042.
Ooh.
That came out to extreme amounts of hype and, you know, excitement, and fell literally on its ass just right out of the gate. Now, to be fair, they have added some patches, so it's crawling, but they never really addressed the majority of the issues. I mean, it's a shit show of a game. And DICE, their whole reaction to it is, don't care. Because they're already talking about the next Battlefield game. They pretty much just said, yep, you paid your money, you took your shot, game kind of sucked, we're out of here, we're moving on. Come back when the new one comes out.
Yeah, that's the problem with these annual release first-person shooters like Call of Duty and Battlefield that come out every year or even every 2 years, depending. Call of Duty's like every year. But it's fucked up how they just go, here you go, if it's great, awesome, we're going to monetize the crap out of that, selling stuff on the store until you stop buying and then the new one comes out. But if it fails, oh well, too bad, and they walk away.
Well, thing I see is it had crap for content. I guess they just assumed that, you know, players shooting each other was all the content they needed because it had next to nothing. And from the things I've read up on it, they would pretty much admit, no, there's not a whole lot there. But, you know, besides other bugs and glitches, and it's just a huge list of issues that haven't been addressed and probably never will be addressed. It's like, if a company treats you like that, why do you keep buying their game?
Because there's a lot of bros that love that stuff. They buy their Xbox and their PlayStation, and they buy their favorite first-person shooters and maybe sports games, and that's it. And they've got a lot of money.
Yeah, well.
You know, I can kind of see why DICE isn't supporting it, though, because Halo just came out, and that's basically kicking everybody's ass. So, yeah, if they didn't catch fire, they might as well just say, yeah, fuck it. Maybe we'll put out a patch next year when the Halo hype runs down a little bit. Try and eke out some money into the summer before we start hype for the in earnest for the new game. They probably think of it as a solid business choice. We'll just write this one off.
Well, they can do that.
Yeah. Well, like you said, at what point do they go, you know what? The Battlefield name is pretty much screwed. We're just going to stick to Call of Duty and Halo instead.
Well, they'll wait 5 years till people forget, and then they'll bring out Battlefield, the new, you know, whatever.
Hey, but at least that one would probably work, because this whole annual push to get these games out, they always come out half-baked. It's kind of like the EA Sports, where they basically release the same basketball, football, and hockey games. They're exactly the same game, just with updated rosters.
Uh-huh.
And why would you pay full price for something like that?
Well, my question is how do you screw that up? If all of the pieces are there, you just need to update it a little bit. How do you fuck that up?
Apparently they found a way.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to video games for me, I immediately, right out of the gate, had my choice. It's right there. It's obvious. The worst video game of the year, in my opinion, is New World. Except it isn't. I would love to say New World is the worst game of the year, because it absolutely fucking deserves it. But there's another game. As bad as New World has been, as fucked their development has been.
It is worse. I know which one you're talking about. But, holy crap.
Yeah, this one, New World's bad, but there's a game that came out in the middle of the year that basically was super hyped up, going to be the... It was really going to push well for people that are fans of the tabletop role-playing game it's based on, and fans of just video games and, you know, role-playing games, you know, third-person action games. It had everything. It was super hyped up. And then it came out, and what people got was Dungeons & Dragons Dark Alliance, and it's absolute shit. I think the quote I put down in my notes is, yes, just flat out awful.
Well, and what really bothered me about this was the Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance series. That was a really fun, albeit simple, game that, you know, it was a fun little RPG, you know, it was a looter shooter kind of game. And it wasn't a game that you had to put a whole lot of thought into, because, you know, you didn't have this huge lore dump kind of thing to follow. It was just, you know, you went in, you killed shit, you got loot, you got stronger, you moved on, you killed bigger things, got better loot, etc.
Right.
And it was all set in the Baldur's Gate area. Great. Then they turned it into a brawler. Why? Why a brawler? I don't get it.
It's just the people developing it might as well. I heard it described once as they took what would have been a generic fantasy kind of looter shooter brawler type of game, third person perspective, which, okay, on its own would have been a mediocre game, but then they had to tack on the D&D title to it. And it made no sense. It really just is stupid as hell. Wizards of the Coast owns the company that developed this.
They fucked it up bad.
I have to believe that the people who actually work on Dungeons and Dragons, the D&D team, had nothing to do with this. Or very limited access.
Couldn't have, no.
This had to have been Hasbro going, hey, look, we have this. We have the rights to D&D. Let's slap it on this game. Because that'll make interest. Hey, you guys over at Wizards of the Coast, pimp this game. Make it seem like it's awesome. But it sucks, sir. Doesn't matter. Make it big.
Well, and they did. When it came out, though, people found out immediately for a looter type game, the gear you get is crap.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, there were so many mechanics that you had, you know, you had to go through all these stupid steps to get something that you actually wanted. You had to collect these tokens or something. I can't remember what it was now, but.
Yeah, you weren't actually getting gear.
You were getting tokens.
Stuff that you didn't get to open until you got out of the game. So you couldn't go and get a sword and use that sword throughout the remainder of the adventure. Oh, no. You had to wait until you got back to town before you could actually find out what you had.
Right. Whereas with any looter type game, if you find something, you can equip it immediately and... If it's a big upgrade, woohoo! But sure, not this game.
I will give them this. There are games like Diablo, Grim Dawn, and others where, okay, you find a sword and you don't know what it is. You have to do some sort of identify spell on it to learn what it is.
Sure, but they give you the ability to identify stuff through scrolls or whatever.
Right. So... Maybe you can't use this item because you don't know what it is. You don't have any identify scrolls or whatever on you. Cool. But that at least is a good lore reasonable reason for not being able to use the full abilities of that weapon.
Oh, no, it's not. No. A lot of the early D&D games, you'd go out there, you'd find an unidentified item. You had the opportunity to equip it. You roll the dice, you take your chance. Maybe it's cursed.
Oh, sure. I'm just saying that I can understand in a game like Diablo or Grim Dawn where you maybe you don't have the don't have any identify scrolls or anything on you. I can see that mechanic. But this, you don't even have that. It's
no.
Just here is your, you have a lore, you have a loot token, you'll be able to, you know, find out what you got when you get back.
Yeah.
And so you could go through this whole adventure and find out you had nothing but shit.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could find out you got something really good early on that really would have helped you out later if you'd just been able to use it. But more likely, no, you'd have gotten shit because their itemization is crap.
Oh, yeah, you're getting stuff that... You could not even possibly use. They put stats on there for a melee type character on caster gear, and vice versa.
Yeah, it's just randomized.
It made no sense. It was just random.
So
the people I saw playing it, they were just. It got to the point where they were laughing because it was so ludicrous. On the how crappy the game was and how terrible the gear was.
It literally gave no thought as to how the itemization should have worked. You know?
Well, they had no clue what they were doing, is obvious.
Right. But hey, would you like to talk about your worst tabletop role-playing game?
Well, and this is tough because... There wasn't a whole lot to come out this year.
No.
And so, of all the ones that I was looking at, that I was interested in, the one that, you know, I'm disappointed in is because, I mean, there's so much hype for it, is Syndicult. It's basically a modern fantasy kind of game with it's the mafia controls these magic, I'm trying to remember how they phrased it, but these powerful magical artifacts are being controlled by the mafia. And so you have to work with the mafia or against the mafia to try and get power of your own.
Okay.
And it just, the site doesn't look like it's been updated. It was supposed to have been out the third quarter of this year, and I know it's still not come out yet, but there's just it's kind of like the project got put on a shelf. Hmm. And the main reason I was excited for it is because, I mean, it's Matt Mercer behind it.
Of Critical Role fame.
Yeah, so maybe it's the pandemic, maybe it's, you know, something else, but...
Maybe it's Maybelline.
The worst game I could find, the only reason it's bad is because it just hasn't come out yet.
Yeah.
There's just not a whole lot of information behind it, so I can't really get, you know...
Yeah, I can see that. I had a choice for worst tabletop game. That will probably be my worst of 2022, because even though they claimed it would be out this year, it has not come out. They just finished freaking pre-orders, and there's a lot of drama around this game, and we'll get into it next year because the drama. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. I tried to restrict myself to games that actually came out and to actual games. I was not even trying to do like expansions or supplements or anything like that, although I considered it. But even then, I couldn't come up with anything. Literally. I've bought a lot of games this year. Not all of them released this year, but a lot of them were. But everything that I've seen that has come out this year, unless it's like some tiny little pay what you want digital game that was put up on DriveThruRPG or itch.io that may not be, you know, that may be kind of questionable in its quality for major releases and even indie releases. You know, the bigger indie releases, they're all good. I have nothing bad to say. I mean, some may be better than others. Like I mentioned several, and I chose Dune among them to be the best. But I can't give a worse tabletop game this year. I can't find one that really fits, and I feel it would be unfair for me to do that. Because... they're not.
Mm-hmm.
They're all reasonable. And, you know, I even look at ones like Babes in the Wood, which is a Powered by the Apocalypse game that I backed on Kickstarter.
Obviously.
And it is kind of a obscure kind of story. You play children who get lost in a magical wood on Halloween night and have adventures. Okay, but there's nothing wrong with it. It's actually pretty cool. Obscure, definitely one-shot material, but also family-friendly fun. So the only thing I can come up with was, oh, you know, technically, Girl Genius role-playing game has released kind of digitally, but not fully. They're going to be releasing the full digital version soonish, but since it hasn't come out yet and it won't be printing till sometime next year, that's off the list. And the only reason I would consider that would be, well... on their Kickstarter, they could have given out the digital copy with if you bought the print copy, they could have tossed in the digital copy, like most companies do. But Steve Jackson Games doesn't do that for some reason. So there's nothing wrong with the game. That's just I have a bone to pick with Steve Jackson Games.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a big deal. It's more of a, hey, that's something that's a problem with the publisher, not the game. And since it's a, you know, I can't really bring myself to hold that against them. There are other games like Void Heart Symphony, which I've had the final PDF for that since May of this year. It is, the game has released digitally. We're still waiting on our print copies. That's not a problem with the game. That's a problem with printing role-playing games in 2021. Yep. It's very hard. Used to be getting a slot to with a printer to get your print run done was the problem. Most recently, it's getting a hold of paper to print your book on. Wow. If it's gotten to that point, printing issues may continue well into 2022. So we may have yet another year of delays and all this. Anytime I back a game on Kickstarter or other platforms anymore, I just assume I'll see it in a couple years, which kind of sucks, but what can you do? It is what it is, right?
Yep.
It's, you know, they'll get it to us when they can get it to us. Anyway, yeah, so it's fun to point and laugh at the worst tabletop games and the worst video games of the year, but instead, if you don't mind, I just like to point and laugh at New World, because holy shit, I watched a video that came out this week from, actually when you're hearing this, it'll be last week, from Josh Strife Hayes on YouTube. He did an almost hour-long rundown of all the problems with New World. Since it was first, you know, the whole history of it, from when it was first announced all the way through its alpha and betas and whatnot, and after launch and all the problems that have been since launch,
mm-hmm.
all the bugs, all the exploits, all the duping.
And it was only an hour long?
Yeah, it was just shy of an hour, but oh, it was freaking packed with information. And I'm sitting there going, I think the last time we talked about it was when I said, I ain't playing this game anymore. It was after the
mm-hmm.
Amazon Game Studios gave a bunch of people 300,000 gold
mm-hmm.
and then had to roll back. There's been multiple exploits and stuff since then. It's gotten to the point now where if you are not in a company, you might as well not play. Solo play is basically dead. They had at one point made it to the point where crafting was completely useless because they had put in this watermark system
mm-hmm.
so that you raised your watermark by doing certain things and beating certain bosses and building up. And the fastest way to raise your watermark was doing end game dungeons, which obviously solo players aren't going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people were getting there because you used to be at the start of the game, you could get great gear just by crafting, right? It was one of the reasons right. I got into the game. Well, the problem is that if your gear switches its gear score based on your watermark level. So if you've got a low, your end game, you're capped out level 60 and your watermark level is low, like a solo player's would be, and you make this level, gear level 200 gear, you craft that, or even buy it off the auction house, off the trading post, you put it on, it changes from 200 to like 150-ish, because it's keyed to your watermark. So you may think you're making this awesome gear, but you're actually not. Oh, it was awesome for somebody with a high watermark, but yours isn't. So there's no point to do crafting anymore.
Well, they were probably trying to get more people to play the dungeons and do the PvP content, you know, the group content. And that's kind of blown up in their face.
Yes. But they have since retracted that. They said that any gear that is crafted or bought off the faction store, if you buy it from get gear through the faction, those will not be keyed to your watermark. So if you get something that's gear level 200, you can still get it and you'll be good. Great. But if you buy something off the auction house or I make you something that's gear level 200, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I give it to you, it's then keyed to your watermark and drops.
Right. So it still makes crafting useless unless you're just doing it for yourself.
Right.
And that's a lot of work to make just stuff for yourself.
Especially when a lot of these items require stuff that you have to go out into the world to get. And that's a lot of more based off of end game dungeons.
Yep.
So they have made solo play virtually impossible and very difficult and not a lot of fun. So, yeah, I'm glad I walked when I did. There are servers that have 5 players on average now out of 2,000 cap. Not great. They're bringing in every day about 1/10 of what they were when it first launched.
I'm amazed it's as high as it is.
The thing is, that's still better than a lot of other MMOs, which is fine. Except those MMOs have like 1 or 2 servers.
Mm-hmm.
New World has dozens upon dozens of them.
Well, so they're going to have to do a server merge because if you don't have an active game or if you don't have an active community, your game's gonna die.
Sure. Now they have a few servers that are doing well. A few. They can leave those alone and take all the smaller ones and cram them together. But then you're gonna have people going, I lost my name. And do we actually believe that Amazon can manage to do a server merge without fucking everything up? I don't.
They haven't shown that they could do anything right to begin with.
Correct. So I may not have a worst tabletop game of the year, but we always have New World because they can always find a way to fuck up.
Well, I wouldn't say you always have New World because at the rate they're going, you may not have New World. It may get shit canned quick.
Oh, that's true. He did actually mention in his video that Amazon Game Studios has started development on multiple games, and thus far only 2 of them have actually launched, and one of those 2 kind of got shut down. So yeah, New World's all they got until Lost Ark comes out next year.
We'll see how that lasts.
Yeah.
Wrapping things up.
Okay, so I guess that's about it for this year, at least topically wise. Do you have any final thoughts before we go, Bielis?
Well, I wanted to mention a tabletop game that's come out this year that I'm not, you know, it's not a game that I think I would enjoy, but I think it's unique enough that it deserves a mention. And that's Monster Care Squad. Basically, you're playing an elite veterinarian-type character who goes out and takes care of these Studio Ghibli-esque kind of monsters that have been infected by this, can't remember what they call it, but it's a disease that turns them violent. And so you have to care for them and heal them. And if you do a good enough job, they might give you a monster gift, which enhances your character. So, for people who are into, you know, that kind of game, it looks like it could be a fun, unique kind of game.
You say it's a tabletop game?
Yeah.
Huh. I don't believe I've actually heard of it. Which...
Yeah, it's Monster Care Squad.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I happen to know a couple people in our old gaming group are huge Studio Ghibli fans.
Mm-hmm.
They would love the hell out of that. So, if they're listening...
Yeah. Well, and for those of you who don't know Studio Ghibli, that's movies like Spirited Away, My Neighbor Totoro, Howl's Moving Castle, Princess Mononoke, Ponyo, Grave of the Fireflies, those sorts of movies, I should say. All excellent.
Yeah, Grave of the Fireflies is... That is dark as hell.
Well, they're not all, you know, happiness and light. They're all kind of dark in one way or another.
Princess Mononoke remains my favorite anime of all time. I know it's very Americanized, but just, you know, I've got the DVD that has the Japanese version with... Yeah, you can, God, the word escapes me. You can read the translations.
Subtitle?
Thank you, subtitles. I was thinking a word that starts captions, with closed captioning. Anyway, I'm tired. Words are hard. Anyway, so yeah, because I know a lot of people complain that, oh, well, the English version, they got all these actors in and they, you know, they brought in these big Hollywood actors instead of using, you know, actual full-time voice actors. And at the time, yeah, that wasn't really known. They didn't really do that very much. Now, that's the standard. Hell, Chris Pratt is going to be voicing Mario in the animated Super Mario Brothers movie. Chris Pratt.
Well, I hope he does well.
Yeah. Anyway, so, yeah, no, I know people get on the whole, the English version of Princess Mononoke. Doesn't matter. Whichever version, that's an awesome movie. So, and even, you know, years later, it's what, couple decades old, it still resonates. Even more so now with the environment like it is, as bad as it's getting. It just,
yeah.
It's got a very strong message. Anywho, like I said earlier, this is the last topical episode of the year. We've still got a couple more shows coming out this year. One is our big holiday show next week. And those who have listened to this show in the last few years know what's coming. And then is our end of year show, which is kind of special. I don't want to get into too much about that. But it will be the end of our fifth year of doing this stuff. First is Pixels and Dice, and now is Loot Mechanics. We haven't missed a month, and we haven't missed a week, except for the 1 month I took off for heart surgery. I'd say we've been pretty on it.
With that heart surgery, were they giving you one?
Fixing the broken one. Yes.
Ah.
It didn't work before, now it does. So, yay!
Are you sure?
Not entirely, no. But, hey, whatever. Point is, we've been doing this for a while, and as far as I know, have no intention of stopping. So, we'll talk to y'all next week with our holiday show. So, until then, I'm Squirmus.
And I'm Bayless.
Generic catchphrase ending.
You didn't listen, did you? Now, look at you. You are an absolute mess. But at least you survived to gibber and moan before our masters and overlords, Beerless and Scummers. Be sure to tremble under their baleful eye as you give this podcast a great review on the podcast service of your choice, or leave a nice comment over on their website, scummy.com. While you are there, check out all the other content they offer, and don't forget to join the Discord server. If you don't, they will know, and they will seek vengeance.